Hi, today's April 17th, 2022. This is Mobile Views Podcast 402. I'm having problems pronouncing. Mobile Views Podcast 402. I'm Todd Agosshort, my good friend, the good Dr. John Westfall. Hello, Dr. John Westfall. How are you, sir?
Hello. I am good. Happy, for those that celebrated, happy Easter.
Since, that's right.
We are recording that on Easter Sunday.
We are. In fact, I think I saw in the news that it's like a triple religious holiday weekend this weekend.
Pretty much if you're in an Abrahamic religion, you've got something to be celebrating this weekend.
Yeah. So, and I don't know enough to say much about that, but happy whatever you are celebrating this weekend. And I hope things are going as well
or
as
you can
expected.
Just celebrate being you. I mean, you don't need to necessarily do anything.
Or if an actor, you can celebrate being somebody else. But
yes.
Anywho. Okay. So, first thing to note, last week I noted, this is a note to self because I forgot to do it. I noted that Audio Hijack, which is what the software that I use to record these podcasts, and have been using it since 2008, I upgraded to 4.0 last week. It's a paid upgrade, so I didn't just click the button because I need to go find a credit card and all that kind of stuff to type in numbers, I assume. But I have not done it yet. It was a busy week. Busy week, so I did not have a chance to do it. I am going to do it, though, because it sounds like an interesting upgrade, and I want to support Rogue Amoeba, the company that has been providing me this software and upgrades or updates for well over a decade now. So I plan to do that. Rogue Amoeba, you will get my $30 or so. The other thing is, so one of the reasons I was busy this past week is that in Hawaii, if you have a wooden home, or mostly wooden home, we have termites here in Hawaii. Not quite like you see in the African savanna with the huge termite mounds and things like that. But they are nasty little critters. And every decade or so, we need to tent our home and fumigate it. Mm. Which means that my family and our pet bunny had to evacuate our home for a little over 24 hours, I think. Yeah, I think it was like 30 hours. Well, it was tented and fumigated, and I had webcams on so I could see the process, which is not much, right? Because they come in, they put gas in your house. It's called Vicane. And then, you know, it's basically dark or darkish.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing was, so I was, I need to shout out to my sister-in-law's family for putting up with me and the bunny for 30 hours. And so while I was there, I said, you know, I took the day off. So I took Thursday off and Friday was a holiday. So, you know, I didn't really have to do work, but I carried my work computer with my work laptop with me in case I could. And I hauled a MacBook Air M1 and an iPad Pro 2020 and an iPad Mini 6 and iPhone and a Pixel 4a. And here's the interesting thing. Out of all those devices, everything except the iPhone 12 Pro could be powered by USB-C. So all I had to do was carry them. It wasn't an Anker. It was another brand. I usually use an Anker. I'm using an Anker right now to power my MacBook Pro. But I had a nice device, a nice power distribution system with two USB-C PD ports, power distribution ports. And so I didn't have to carry a mess of chargers and cables. I just needed, you know, one adapter, and I could power several devices simultaneously. So, or recharge them, really, not power them. So, yay. Mm-hmm. You know, I was really skeptical. I don't know about you, John, but when I heard about USB-C, I was really skeptical. And I said, oh, my goodness. Another cable, another power distribution thing. Do I really need this? And the answer is, oh, yes, I do need it.
Yeah, it is amazing how USB-C has become so useful in, I wouldn't say a relatively short amount of time. The adoption curve was a little bit rocky for it, especially at the beginning with trying to figure out which cables to use and all of the crazy permutations and all that. But now that we are living in a mostly USB-C world,
yeah,
to the point that looking in front of me right now, I have a USB-C connector and a micro USB for charging whatever I'm charging over here. I think it's definitely exciting to think about a world where maybe everything would be USB-C. Eventually, I think Apple's going to have to give it up with Lightning and move the iPhone to USB-C, and that will be a nice day.
Yeah. And I should note that in addition to USB-C, I bought a inexpensive gosh, I don't even know what the brand is, but inexpensive battery charger from my Apple Watch. So I just charged that up before you left, and I tossed it in my bag of gadgets, and that's how I charged my watch overnight. So
now I bought a similar USB rechargeable battery with a special pad for the Apple Watch, and I thought this was going to be really useful in my bag. And then I found that for some weird reasons, the only external battery I've ever had that discharges when it's not in use. I don't know if there's a short somewhere in it or what it's doing, but I need to charge it literally every 2 weeks if I want it to have any kind of charge.
Oh, no.
So I'm a little bit annoyed about that, but I don't use it very often. And honestly, when I do travel, I end up using the folding duo charger that Apple sells that charges both the phone through MagSafe and the watch through its own charger. So that's my bedside charger and my travel charger.
Interesting. And not a charger story, but you know, speaking of batteries that discharge when off, and I know off is a relative term, but I'm going to use that the term off in the sense of not in sleep mode. Every Chromebook I own, and I own four of them, every Chromebook I own discharges in when they're turned off. So yes, I know there's a trickle charge and they're doing stuff even when they're off, but not in sleep mode, but off. Not in suspend, not sleep, off. In fact, I powered up one of my Chromebooks last night that I hadn't used in about a week probably. You know, because I have four, so I can rotate through them. Mm-hmm. And it said, hey, I've got 5% battery left. You might want to plug me in.
That is kind of crazy. And I have that same experience with my Kindle Oasis, but that's because I only use the thing once or twice a year. Yeah. So I can understand it discharging between uses. I mean, it is purely my, when I go to the beach, I use the Kindle Oasis.
And you are not near a beach, as I recall.
No, but for that particular use case, it is the best thing to read books on. I will not argue the case. E-Ink is a much better display if you're at a beach.
Anywhere in sunlight,
else, I'm
yeah.
Happy with anywhere else, I'm happy with my iPhone.
Or you can take an umbrella also, and use your iPhone.
Also, overheats at the beach less than my iPhone.
Oh, good point.
My iPhone, I typically have to keep turned off in my bag if I'm going to take it with me, whereas the Kindle will be on, no problem.
You know, I gotta say, it hasn't happened to me recently, but then again, you know, life has changed in many years. So, back I think in his iPhone 4. Yeah, it's probably the iPhone 4. And my daughter was running in track when she was, you know, in track in high school. I remember sitting on a track field, and did I bring an umbrella with me? I may have just been sitting in the sun with a hat on or something. And I pulled out my iPhone 4 in between heats, and it said, "Hey, I'm overheating. I'm shutting down." Yeah.
I remember that used to happen. The iPhone 5 and 6. Would happen to me in the car. I'd have it on the dashboard, or I'd have it somewhere in direct sun without realizing it, and it would overheat. I'd have to put it somewhere, you know, in the back seat or something, just to keep it going. It's kind of crazy to think about those things that we don't worry about as much anymore.
Yeah, that has not happened to me in years, maybe a decade. You know, it's been a while since that sort of problems have happened to me. So, yay for engineers who figure things out over time. Any rate, so yes, the joy of USB-C, PD, power distribution, really, really appreciate it. I use it at home too, by the way. In fact, I don't know if I told you this, John, I probably did. Shortly after I got my MacBook Air M1, which was what, 2020, I guess, I misplaced its power adapter. I've never found it in, you know, the 18 months or so I've owned my M1 MacBook Air. But instead of being in a panic and saying, oh, gee whiz, I got to go spend $50 on a, you know, Apple power adapter or something, probably more if it's Apple. I said, well, it's USB-C. Let's just plug it in. And yep, I've been using a third-party USB-C PD port to charge it. I still don't know where I put the – I'll find it someday. You know, one of the things when you tent a house, by the way, is you're kind of forced to do some cleaning and, you know, like oh, my goodness, I have a two-year-old frozen something in my freezer that we should have tossed. Because, you know, you got to bag all your food and things. So I did find, I don't know if I told you this, when my daughter restarted grad school, I had to loan her my Windows laptop. And I loaned it to her because I offered to buy her one. She says, no, 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 I just need it for this semester because the professor insists I use a Windows laptop. And I said, can't use Parallels? No, I've got to use a Windows laptop. Okay, fine. You know, so I loaned her my then fairly new, gosh, what do I have? I think I have an HP. I want to say I have an HP laptop. And it came with a... The reason I bought that particular laptop is because it came with a stylus. Kind of a proprietary stylus, but it's a fairly nice stylus. And I thought, oh, I can draw with it, you know, my Doodle the Day project. And so I said, well, do you need the stylus? And she says, nah, I just need the laptop. And, you know, and it's a USB-C, so you can use that to power it. She says, nah, you keep it so I don't lose it. I said, okay, that's fine. I lost it. You know, I thought, Todd, put it somewhere safe. So when, you know, your daughter returns your laptop, you'll, and of course, I didn't see it, you know, so this was like last fall. And I said, last fall, 2021. And I just found it while we were cleaning up for our house, Nadine. So yay for tenting and cleaning up, I guess, despite the hassle.
Well, I always say when I lose something that it's somewhere safe, because I always think, put it somewhere safe. And I am the number one threat to all of my things. So if I can't find them, they're safe.
We need RFID in everything we own, John. RFID with unique, you know, identification tags. Not just that, yes, I'm here, but what are you? I know it's one of the things I wanted to do in the data center, and I never did. I should restart that thought, since we may have money to do some data center renovation. Is just simply when you put something in, most things are in the cloud these days, but you still need some physical objects around the data center. And when you put it in, just put an RFID tag, and I guess it has to be passive, so you don't have to change the battery every couple of years. But you know, something with a unique code, and just say, hey, what is this? You know, what do I have in this room? And just start wandering around. I like that idea. I'm going to do it. Okay. So the first topic I have, and I don't have a lot. I've only found two things. Thank goodness John found stuff. Is John and I have long been interested, I think, in smartwatches that do other things, especially health metrics. And I don't think this... I think our Apple Watch... Does our Apple Watch already do AFib? I know it does some kind of heart thing.
It does.
Yeah. So, but, you know, Apple Watches are expensive. And so on the Google blog, which Google now owns Fitbit, or has owned Fitbit since last year, they note that the new Fitbit feature has AFib detection, or AFib detection more accessible. It doesn't say when this feature will be available or which current devices, if any, can support it. But, you know, Fitbits tend to be under $200. There are ones that cost more, but they tend to be under $200. So much more affordable for people who may be concerned about their, you know, heart rhythm and sort of that sort of thing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I've got a Fitbit Charge 4, which is a couple years old, I guess, which I really, really like. I wear, you know, being weird, being a geek, I have an Apple Watch and a Charge 4 on at the same time, because I just happen to believe Fitbit does a better job of actually measuring steps and stairs and things than my Apple Watch does. But I know you were using Fitbit for some research a while back. I think you just have an Apple Watch now, but I thought you'd find that interesting, since we're always hoping for more stuff.
Anything that gets these health metrics, more available, not quite sure what we use all of them for. But, you know, getting them available is nice to have. Good to have the option.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think I read that Apple is even working on like some kind of blood. I don't know how they're going to do this non-invasively, but some kind of blood sugar sensor and, you know, process, I guess, maybe not a mechanism, but a process. So for some future Apple Watch, I'm still waiting for AirPods that measure my ear temperature, you know, my body temperature through my ears constantly. So I'm waiting for that. I don't know. It's just getting cooler. And I will tell you, John, you're wondering, you know, who old people like myself, old people, when you get old, you become much more health conscious than you were when you're young or younger.
So I mean, I have lost 200 pounds in the last 3 years. So I kind of understand as you get older, wanting to be more health conscious.
Thank you. Thank you, young person, John, for understanding that. But, you know, most young people, I remember when I was young, it was like, whatever. Okay, now I'm a, you know, I started getting next item on the second of two items I have is I noticed I got some notifications from Google Fi, which is one of my, you know, phone. And I have two phones, and my Pixel 4a is on Google Fi, which is awesome. So Google Fi is you know, an MVNO that uses the old well, not old, but uses T-Mobile and Sprint. And now that T-Mobile and Sprint are the same, they're, you know, T-Mobile, Sprint, whatever they're called. And I think also U.S. Cellular or one of those kind of things. Plus, if you go abroad, and I have used it abroad, in countries that I think T-Mobile has service in, you have you know, unlimited voice and text, and then you pay per gigabyte for data. Anyway, so I've been getting, I got an email message actually from Google Fi saying, hey, we've got new unlimited plans that start at $20 a month. And I go, whoa, that's pretty amazing, because that's what I pay now for, I think, 6 gigabytes a month, which quite frankly is plenty for me. Mm-hmm. But it's slightly misleading. It's true, but, you know, it's kind of like Microsoft error messages. It's true, but it's not really what you think. $20 is for per line for 4 or more lines. So, you know, basically if you have a family of four, it'll be $20 a month if you, all four people have phones, which is a great deal for anybody's priced out unlimited plans. It's $50 a month for a single line, like myself. I'm the only person on my Fi plan, and which is still a good deal if I need it unlimited. But the thing I notice is my current plan, which I think is now called Flexible or something, I pay $20 a month for unlimited voice and text, and then I pay... I get 6 gigabytes free, and I think I pay $5 or $10 per gigabyte more if I go over that. But if you're going to travel with Google Fi phone, you need to get what's called the Unlimited Plus plan to get roaming outside of the U.S. Mm-hmm. So, and it's still a good deal. It's still very affordable. But, you know, be careful what you do before you switch. Make sure it's really what you want. I personally don't need unlimited on my Android phone. I'm within Wi-Fi shot almost everywhere I go these days. And in pretty good shape. But that said, I have been a Google Fi user ever since I dumped T-Mobile years ago. Because I think I've told this story before. But one day I was walking down downtown Honolulu looking for lunch. And I needed to make a call. I needed to check something, like email or something. And I had no data. I had voice, I had text, but I had no data. And so I said, what's going on? I pay my bills every month. So I called T-Mobile, since the phone part still works. I said, hey, you know, I have voice, text, and no data. What's the deal? And it says, oh, you were in a grandfathered plan. Yes, I know that. We cut you off without notification. I said, oh, okay. I'm going to cut you off too. And so I switched to Google Fi, which still uses the same T-Mobile network, plus at the time Sprint and some other stuff, and been a very happy camper ever since. Okay, speaking of mobile, you definitely went mobile and mobilizing.
I very much did. So one of the things I've been looking at over the last couple of, about a year now, is getting a e-bike. Or you know, electric bike, a bike that has the option to use it as a regular bike or also use pedal assist on a motor or even a full throttle. And so I picked up over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, a Rad Expand 5 from Rad Power Bikes. And it's sort of a cross between a commuting bike and a all-terrain bike. It's got very fat tires on it, so you could take it off of pavement if you wanted to, but I basically wanted something I could use for exercise or I could use for commuting back and forth to work, because my wife and I just have one car. But it is definitely more
I think my
Wi-Fi. I got the LCD screen up.
Yeah, we got a little bit of a glitch. I can hear you fine, John.
Ah, okay. All right. So one of the things that I upgraded was it comes with an LED button iPad to change the settings on it, I went with an LCD. And the LCD actually has a USB port, so you can literally charge your phone off of your electric bike while you're riding, just like you can charge your phone from your car.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got a phone mount for the handlebars, so I can have my phone in front of me if messages come in or anything like that. Of course, AirPods Pro will read me most of the messages. And I just bought on Amazon for $35 a little Bluetooth remote control for my phone that'll give me quick access to, you know, next and back buttons and all of that, so I can put that where my thumb is instead of in the middle where my phone is.
And I gotta say, John, I'm looking at the accessories on the webpage, and having that phone mount you talk about next to the LCD display upgrade, it looks like you're in an airplane cockpit kind of.
It really does. I mean, you can do a lot of stuff. And plus, of course, there are tons of apps on the App Store for both Apple and Google that are trip computers for, biking and different bike tracking and all that. And Apple last year did also redo the algorithm for outdoor cycling to take into account e-bikes and the pedal assist function, which Pedal Assist, if you've never used a bike that has it, this is where you have a motor on the back wheel that has a cadence sensor that will actually detect when you're bike basically pushing down so that it can assist you on one stroke and not the other, because it'd be very annoying if it was also hitting at the wrong time. And this bike also has a full throttle, so if I really want to, I can just let it do all the work. Which is really nice from stop signs, because it gets you back up to the speed you want to be going pretty quick.
And it's foldable.
Yeah, this one's foldable as well. This one does like a ton of random things. But the pedal assist, if anyone's wondering, the best I can talk about it is if you were going to an airport and walking on a moving walkway, and if you've ever been walking your normal speed and then realized, gee, I'm going really fast, because you look over to the side and you see how fast things are going, that's kind of what pedal assist is like on an e-bike, where you're just kind of naturally pedaling your normal speed that would maybe take you 8 or 9 miles per hour, and all of a sudden you're going 18 or 20 miles per hour. It's a little bit shocking as you get used to it.
So, you know, I'm looking at the website and I have two questions. Question number one is, how fast can this thing go? I don't see the maximum speed on it.
A little, like right around 20 miles per hour.
Okay, so it's not highway ready. It's like street.
No.
Bicycle, like a fast bicyclist.
Yep.
A human-powered bicyclist. And the second is, this is probably asking too much of it, but when you pedal, it doesn't help charge the battery, right? That just pedaling.
This model does not, but they do have models that do reclaim the power from pedaling. So this one, it won't. And the battery is removable, so you can either charge the battery while it's locked to the bike, or you can remove the battery and take it wherever you have your charger and charge it. I have taken it out. I think I've ridden about 30 miles on it now on one charge, and I still have more than half the battery. So
yeah, it does say 25 to 45 miles too often per charge. So it's pretty good distance for, you know, like you said, for commuting short distances. You know, you're not going to go from, from a suburb to a metropolitan area in most places. But
probably not.
Yeah,
probably
but in not. A university campus type environment like yours, where you're outside of campus, and that's very handy. Okay, are you wearing a helmet? I hope so.
Yeah, I got a helmet with it. I mean, when you're going 20 miles per hour on a bike, you kind of want a helmet, just because it's a little faster than you're used to.
And you know, I gotta say, I used to be a bicyclist. I mean, I used to bicycle all over the place, mostly because I didn't have a car at one point. But for people who think, 20 miles an hour. On a bicycle? That feels really fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done 34 downhill on a bicycle, and I thought I was like ripping at a 60 or 70 miles an hour, you know. But I'm not. It just feels that way, quite frankly, especially since this is a little heavier, but on a regular bicycle, which is lighter, you really feel every bump on the road, and so that, I think, adds to the sensation of speed. This looks great, though.
Yeah, and I will say that is the one problem with an e-bike that you don't probably think about is the extra weight. So when I go out, if I'm using it for exercise, I'll turn off the pedal assist completely and just use human power. And when you're using human power, you're basically human plus 70 pounds of bike.
Right.
So
which is different from 5 pounds of bike.
Workout. Yes.
Especially uphill.
The battery does weigh about 7 pounds, and then everything that is bike is 63 more pounds. Yeah. And of course, it has a rear rack on it, so you could have I have a bike lock on there and things like that add more weight. But
yeah, I'm looking at the accessories now, and let's see what they got. All kinds of stuff. They got a front mounted basket and a front rack and a rear view mirror, which they call a rad mirror. And of course,
I would
get
the rear view mirror. I got that as well. Yeah. I've actually maxed out some of the only thing I didn't really get was the comfort saddle.
Oh,
but I got the
mirror.
I got the phone mount. I got the LCD upgrade. I got the water bottle holder, because why not?
Gotta.
I got the better headlight, so I have a headlight that is really bright. And of course, this thing has a tail light that detects when the brake calipers are engaged, so it'll flash your brake light brighter. Bike technology. If the last time you had a bike like myself was 20 years ago, you are missing out on some cool new tech.
It's got a pet basket carrier for small dogs and cats and things. This is really amazing. I never heard of it.
Take the bunnies. Take the bunny with you.
Handlebar mitts. That's something I don't need. Handlebar mitts. Handlebar bag. Boy, and you start adding this stuff onto your, what did you say? It's a 70-pound bicycle, a 70-pound vehicle.
Yeah.
You'll be adding some weight. I will say this, though, having been a bicyclist many, many, many years ago. At some point, after you've ridden this thing for more than a couple of months, you'll say, you know what? That $70 enhanced comfort saddle, that's looking good.
Yeah, I do think it will be something on my eventual upgrade list.
This is very, very cool looking. You know, I've over the last couple of years, especially even before the pandemic, I did notice a lot of electric scooters, not quite the level of this one, but smaller scooter type electric scooters. I've seen electric skateboards. I've even seen an electric, I don't know what, it's not really a, it's like a unicycle, but it's basically like a tiny steamroller tube that with pedals on the side or stands on the side, and they just roll along with just, one tube. And I've seen a guy riding that. And some of the cheap Segway knockoffs without the handle. You just sort of stand on a platform. And I've seen a lot of those. And I don't know. I think at my age, I don't have the balance to stand on these, these single wheel things. But I'm not even sure I can still bicycle. I haven't ridden a bicycle in years either. Haven't done it every day.
Riding
a bicycle.
So you'll be fine.
Alrighty. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Okay, the next one I find very interesting because I have thought about this, but I have not done it. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, so one of the things as a good geek that I know I should be doing that I am not, and I'm going to try to get into, is being better about version control with my own programming projects. Because I've never really had much use for it because I'm an individual and I don't work on a development team. And if I need to make a fork of a version, I just save a new copy of it and go off of that. Very bad at version control. So I decided that I wanted to get more into it. So I spun up my own Git server basically so that I can have a code repository that's backed up and all that. And I started using Git for my R analysis files and things like that. But I've started to wonder if it wouldn't be a bad idea to explore using it with things that you don't normally think about that aren't code or aren't flat file. Word documents, PowerPoint documents. There are diff handlers for Word and PowerPoint and all of that.
Yeah.
So you could decide to use it for those. But for example, my workflow right now with my classes each semester is I create a new directory for that semester. I copy over files from the last semester and I edit them and modify them and all of those things, which means it's nice. I can go back to what was this PowerPoint looking like 2 years ago and grab an old slide that I might have deleted. But also, I know I'm replicating a lot of files that I don't have to, because some of those slide decks just stay the same regardless, and the notes probably stay the same regardless. And so, I don't know. Do you use version control much? What are your thoughts on how you would use it?
So I don't use it today, but when I was younger, like a lot of things I did when I was younger, but not now. I've never used Git. I had to note down what did I use. I think I used SCCS, RCS, and Subversion. So that tells you how old it's been or long it's been. I actually did not use it for my daily notes, but I remember using it for some documentation for non-programming projects. It's like process documentation. And it worked out really well because back then we had version control in Word, but I didn't like it, or I didn't like the way it did it. And so I think a Subversion back then, I don't even know if Subversion's still around, but Subversion really let me, handle, it was a non-Word doc. I think I kept everything in text file and then I, formatted it at the end kind of thing. But it really did help me with that, a couple of projects I was doing. I thought about doing it on my daily notes because I had read about somebody who did that, 20 years ago or something. But I never ended up doing it. I really liked the idea, though. I thought that was a really, really cool idea because sometimes you edit your own notes, for historical accuracy and stuff. But I am curious to see what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, I'll give it a good go and see what happens. I might try rolling it out a little bit over the summer to some of my teaching files and see if I find it useful, how I find it, that sort of thing. But it definitely is an idea, and I know it's probably a better practice than what I'm doing now. But I also know that I could also be spinning up my PowerPoint slides every semester in R, because one of the things that I wrote a whole chapter on in my practical book? R book was on how to use R to generate your PowerPoints. And so I could potentially put all of my PowerPoints into R scripts, which would give me the benefit of being able to edit them as one flat file for the entire deck, and then just hit a compile button and spit out the PowerPoint. And then when I'm done with it, just delete it and spin it out next semester when I've edited it again. So
that's funny.
I don't know. There's a lot that you can do if you are, into things. And Markdown, as you've mentioned in the show notes, is a very powerful way to take notes. I've written books in Markdown. Yeah. In fact, two of my last three books were Markdown, was how I wrote them. So
yeah. Yeah, it's a decade old.
Which means that the
article.
Entire contents of that book are a big text file, which is even funnier to think about. And backup is just a big text.
And it's funny, and this is not really version control, but it is a way. So every Wednesday morning, I meet with some of the managers that work with me, and I have a slide deck ready for them every Wednesday morning on our project status and various other things. And the way I've been doing it over the last couple of months is again not version control, but I just pause for thought about how I should do it. So the slide deck, I use the same slide deck every week, and things that are done get deleted, and things that are new are highlighted in yellow, and things that are still in progress but not new are unhighlighted. So if it was from last week, I'll unhighlight it if there's no changes to it. And so when I rip through the slide deck, and it's a 30-minute meeting, so it's not a long meeting, a 25-minute meeting. And so as I rip through the slide deck, basically I skip over everything that's not yellow. And figure they're smart people, they know how to read. And I also put it in Teams file tab for them so they can, if they missed a meeting or something, they can refer to it. And without me saying a word, they can see what's new and what's still important but not new. And so that's kind of my PowerPoint version control that's very inefficient in terms of space conservation, since I do make a copy of every PowerPoint slide. But I like the thing. I've never seen anybody do it that way before for, a periodic meeting. And this is, like I said, every Wednesday morning. But I wish people more people did that for, regular meetings. Because a lot of times morning meetings, whatever. Didn't we talk about this last week? And in fact, we did. So I like it. I'm enjoying this process I've been developing. And
I'll note
go ahead.
One last thought sure. I had on version controls. I was doing some research on how you can use version control in ways yeah. that are not just code. I yeah. came across someone who mentioned using it to basically index their entire hard drive using Git wow. to know when software was basically misbehaving. When was software writing to places where it shouldn't, and yeah. what files were being added and modified. And I mean, if you had the time, or especially if you're doing some sort of a forensic analysis, I mean, that's one way to do it, a cheap tool that a lot of us already know.
Yeah.
For differencing.
Financial institutions should probably do that as practice, you know? Somebody's mm-hmm. fussing around with stuff in their environment. It seems like it would create a giant log file, though.
yeah.
You know? It was everything on your hard drive, including, you know, file access links and all that kind of stuff. Interesting idea, a little bit obsessive, but an interesting idea. And as you said, has forensic value if into that sort of thing. Well, you know, having had nothing to say, we used up 37 minutes. So as usual.
As we usually do.
Yeah, as usual. Anyway, Mobile Views Podcast 402, and that's a wrap. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.